Welcome to Traverse Legal Radio, the Tech Lawyer Podcast, a show dedicated to helping entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders navigate legal issues, grow revenue, and increase their valuation. This podcast is sponsored by the IP and litigation attorneys at Traverse Legal PLC. Visit traverselegal.com to learn how Traverse Legal's attorneys are changing the way law is practiced. Now, here's your host, trial attorney Enrico Schaefer.
Welcome to Traverse Legal Radio. My name is licensing attorney Enrico Schaefer. I do a lot of software licensing and software litigation for the law firm Traverse Legal, www.traverselegal.com. Today on the show, we have Russell Galvin. Russell is also an attorney with Traverse Legal, and he specializes in software licensing, but he also has a lot of expertise in open source software licensing. So we're going to learn a little bit about open source today and start talking about the various issues that face open source developers, licensors, and licensees in the open source space. Welcome to the show, Russell.
Hi, Enrico. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Russell, why don't you give us a little bit about your background and your special interest in open source software?
Sure. I'm coming from Ford Motor Company, where I spent 2 years on their open source team, basically helping the entire global enterprise with all of their inbound and outbound open source licenses for any software they were using or any software they were distributing to the public.
Yeah, and so you've got this kind of firsthand knowledge as Ford takes in different software from vendors and internally develops software. And obviously, one of the issues that every single company that's dealing in the technology space, whether software or hardware, needs to be thinking about is what kind of licenses are in the software that I'm using, either because I'm bringing in third-party software, I'm using libraries, or what have you, and to make sure that you're not violating someone else's copyright license when you license your software. And part of that is just really understanding what's in your code, because there's a lot of cut and paste out there. There's a lot of use and reuse of code. There's a lot of companies that are using outsourced software developers in bringing them into your project. So you really have to have a full understanding of whose code is it, making sure you have rights in that code, and understanding what licenses might be coming into your project. Russell, let's just start with some basics here. What is open source software?
Open source software very generally refers to any software that is licensed under a software license that allows the recipient to access and use the source code that underlies the software itself. Now, this is important because the source code is where you're able to modify the software, make changes, adapt it to new uses, and really add all kinds of functionality and do pretty much anything you want with the software. So there are a number of different open source licenses that all have their own requirements and obligations. So open source really just refers generally to a large class of different software licenses.
Yeah, and the open source movement obviously has been incredibly important to both the birth and growth of the internet, really. And whereas it was relatively new and novel at the beginning, it's now a real important piece of the puzzle for virtually any company in the technology space, at least to be aware of, if not to leverage and use and make sure that you're compliant with not only your own different IP risk mitigation techniques, but that you're also compliant with all open source software, which means if there's open source software in your licensed software, you need to be aware of that because it may be causing you some liability problems and adding to your risk. What is kind of the history of open source and how did we get to this point today? If you can give us kind of an overview of the open source legacy issues and how we ended up at this point.
Sure. It's kind of funny that now open source is becoming such a major issue for so many large enterprises, because at the beginning of sort of software development and the internet, most software was actually essentially considered open source just because developers and programmers weren't taking too much interest in their copyrights and intellectual property rights in the software they were writing. It really wasn't until a little bit later that individuals started to realize, hey, I can make a lot of money if I protect my software with copyright and make sure I enforce those copyright rights that I have. And so the most of the software that folks are familiar with today is really proprietary software. It's software that's owned by some commercial entity that's selling that software to make a profit. But originally, most software wasn't considered proprietary in that sense, and that's why it's kind of strange that software began in an open source environment, and now it's sort of coming full circle all the way back to open source licensing, where developers are really sharing their code and working together, collaborating, because they see value in that. It's sure, I can try and strictly maintain my own code and not allow anybody to use it, but if I share it with others, maybe they can help me fix bugs. Maybe they can help me learn things that I didn't know about it, and there's really a mutual benefit there.
Yeah, so we represent a company called Moodle. Moodle is the largest open source software project for online learning. And, you know, they have grown in large part as a result of the collaboration that they're getting from their community of developers who continue to contribute code into the Moodle project. And the same thing with Red Hat and so many others. They've been able to scale and grow because they bring an army of developers to the project, and those army of developers could be anywhere, could be anyone. They're simply contributing to the code because they've got a particular problem they're trying to solve, and then they're adding that potentially to the platform, and the licensor, the person in control of the open source, is making a decision as to whether or not to bring that into the source code, making it available for download for everyone. But you end up being able to kind of crowdsource your project in a way that is very hard to replicate in a, especially an early stage or growth stage company, because you've got limited resources and therefore you've got limited developers. And so why does open source really matter in today's tech space?
Quite frankly, at this point, it's unavoidable. Every single piece of software out there is going to contain some open source modules. It's very rare for something to be completely written from scratch, just because why reinvent the wheel? If you need a certain functionality and there's already something freely available for you to reuse out there, you're going to be wasting time if you try to rewrite it yourself. So it's really become ubiquitous. It's everywhere in every product you're using, everything from the cell phone in your pocket right now to the car you drive to your computer. Everything has some open source in it. So it's going to touch every aspect of our lives. We might not realize it. We might not see it because it's hidden, but it's certainly there. And the legal implications that surround the licensing aspects and the intellectual property aspects are going to be there as well.
Right. Give us some examples of what are the most familiar devices or hardware or software platforms that people use that implicate open source.
Everything uses open source. The platforms that are purely open source, though, so like we have to make the distinction between proprietary software that uses open source and then actual open source software. In the proprietary side, I mean, you're just thinking of Windows or Mac operating system, and these things are certainly going to contain some open source code. But on the open source side, you do have open source operating systems. The Linux-based systems, probably the most popular being the Ubuntu system. And you can install that on any computer you want. You just have a computer. You might have to make sure that you remove Windows fully. But you can install Ubuntu, which is completely open source, and you're free to modify that source code yourself, and it gives you a lot of freedom to create and innovate, and you're not restricted by technical features built into, say, Windows or Mac operating system.
Right, because I can't go and modify Windows operating system to solve some problem or craft some solution that is unique to me. But in an open source environment, all that's available. You can either hire a developer, if you are a developer, you can actually make those modifications on the fly and then make them available to other people as well.
Absolutely. It gives you all the freedom to customize and make solutions that fit your particular needs. In enterprise settings, this can be instrumental to finding a efficient resolution to some complex problems.
And in terms of, you know, why does open source software matter? Let's narrow that question down a little bit. Let's say I'm a proprietary software company, right? And so I'm growing. I've got a $10 million in revenue, licensing my software, charging a licensing fee for the use, for the download and use of my software. Why do I care about open source?
In the context of proprietary software like that, the biggest issue that most companies are going to face is something called copyleft licensing, which is a play on the term copyright. So a copyright is basically your right under the laws of whatever country you're in to protect works that you create. So if you write a book or you write a piece of code, that's your property, or that's your material that you can protect, and you can say, hey, nobody else can copy this without my permission. Copyleft is kind of the opposite in the sense that it says anybody can copy this and reuse it with my permission. And furthermore, anybody that they give it to, they have to make sure they also have the right to modify it, redistribute it, and all these things. And that can become a problem in the context of your own proprietary software, because if you put some copyleft code in your own software, you run the risk of your own software becoming a derivative of that copyleft open source software. And if your software is deemed a derivative of that software, then it has to be relicensed under the same terms as the open source license, which can dramatically reduce your ability to control your own software and makes you lose a lot of rights that you would otherwise have under intellectual property laws.
So for instance, the right to charge money for a license for your software, or the right to control distribution of your software. Give us some examples of the types of things that might happen if you end up with a piece of open source software in your code that you are trying to charge people money for.
The biggest issue under these copyleft licenses is going to be that you're forced to release your own source code for your software, and you're forced to allow others to use it. So, for example, if you write an application that does certain things and you don't want other competitors to know how you make those things happen or how you did it, you don't want them to be able to see your source code. You don't want them to be able to copy and use your source code. If you were forced to comply with an open source license and you're forced to release the source code for your own proprietary code, your competitors could go and take that code and completely replicate your product and start distributing their own product that does the same thing. Or they could use it to understand your product and enhance their own products. It's really risking a lot of your own sort of trade secrets and intellectual property that you would otherwise want to keep secret from competitors.
Now, let's talk a little bit about why this matters in a minute. Let's talk first about how would I know? Let's say I'm the CEO of a software company. I've got 4 years into the project. I started out using outsourced developers, and I took an assignment of the rights from them to make sure that I own the code. I added some employees. I've had developers coming and going. And now I'm making $50 million gross revenue per year. And how would I even know if there's any open source software in my code? How do I understand what my risk is on this particular issue?
Really what it comes down to is the license terms that are provided with the software when you download it or receive it. So you need to be mindful of any terms you're agreeing to or accepting. We all, you know, see terms of use on websites and software and things we use, and we'll it's pretty typical to just click through, not read those terms and things like that. And that's kind of the case with open source. Is first of all, from the very beginning, you should be mindful of any terms you're accepting. So every piece of software you're downloading and using to develop your own software, or just as like a tool, you know, an application you install on your computer, you should be mindful of any terms that come along with that software. And the tricky part with open source software is that it's extremely common for those licenses to sort of be hidden in the code itself, because, you know, they're providing you the code. So if you want, you can go read the code and you'll see the licenses there. And that's where it can get tricky. For smaller pieces of open source software, you can, you know, go inside the files, go inside the directories, the folders, and things like that. Look for files that have names like license.txt, license file, or copyright file, and you can look at those and try to see what terms came with it. But if it's a larger software package, that might not be practicable. You might not be able to go through and click through all the folders and everything to see what all the license terms are. And every single file could technically be under different terms. So like you could have 10 different files in a folder, and each file at the top of the file could say, these are the terms that you agree to by using this file. And you could have different terms in every one. So you need to check it all. And for larger things where it's not practical to go and check by hand for each file, there are tools available you can download and use to scan the source code, the files, the text files, for any software that you're developing yourself or any open source software that you've downloaded. And some of these tools are really effective and really powerful and will do a good job of identifying every single legal term or license that's in there. And you can use that to determine what licenses you're being bound by.
Right. And, you know, we do a lot of business with software companies. Part of the legal work we do as copyright licensing attorneys is develop approaches and business models around licensing for these companies, for their proprietary software. And every day we're negotiating and drafting upstream and downstream licensing agreements for these companies. But rarely do you hear of these companies actually having done a due diligence on their code, right? We at Traverse Legal, as copyright licensing attorneys and as open source specialists, we can run that kind of search on someone's code. It's not something that you would typically see lawyers doing, but by default, there's not a lot of vendors in the space who are doing this kind of due diligence. Tell us a little bit about the types of things you would do as a licensing attorney for a client that needed to understand their risk on open source with their proprietary software or with their open source software, quite frankly.
Sure. I mean, it will always start with me sort of interviewing the client to just understand their needs. What is their business model? What are they trying to do? Do they want to distribute their software? What are they using? And really, it's all driven by the needs of the client, what the client's trying to do, and that's going to be the starting point. And then once you understand that, I want to know what they're using. So if it's a piece of software that the client intends to distribute to third parties, to the public, or to their own customers, I would ask to get the source code of their software, and I would give it a scan under one of the tools we use. And that will allow me to identify any license or copyright language or any legal language that we need to be mindful of. And then from there, I will generate a risk assessment where I look at every single license. I determine which licenses apply, because sometimes we can rule out these licenses. There are different reasons why an open source license might not be valid or might not apply in a particular situation. And once I've sorted through which licenses apply and which ones don't, I would generate a risk assessment for the client, telling them what their requirements and obligations under all of the identified licenses are, and basically making sure that what they want to do, what their plan that they advise me on is, would comply with these licenses. And if I see any red flags, or if I think that there's anything that they're trying to do that's probably not going to comply with one of these licenses, I'll let them know, and I'll work with them to either change the code, go find different tools, different code that they can use, rewrite it, anything we can do to either eliminate those licenses or get them in compliance with the licenses. And there's a whole host of things that you're going to have to do. All of these licenses have different terms. As a base level for most open source licenses, you are going to need to provide some sort of acknowledgement to the author of that open source software. And that can be a big issue for larger software applications that have, thousands of different open source authors that you need to acknowledge every single one of them, and you're going to have to identify the licenses. And that can be a lot of work. It's better to start it early in projects, but even for projects that are far along, I advise giving it a scan and doing what we can to identify all the licenses, all the copyrights, and making sure we're in full compliance, because there is case law that failure to comply with an open source license can be both a breach of contract and might, in certain jurisdictions, result in damages for copyright infringement, which can be significant.
Yeah, so you've got this risk of potentially getting sued or receiving a threat letter on a particular problem with your code because it includes open source software and you're violating the license of that open source software. But as a copyright licensing attorney, you also have to be aware of the fact that there are funding rounds that usually go along with capitalizing these companies, that there's this kind of there's this asset value, the intangible assets, the tangible assets. Certainly your software code is going to be a primary asset. So at any valuation stage, a really sophisticated venture capital group in the software space is going to want to understand the IP value, and part of that is understanding the risks. So, you know, we represent venture capital groups that are investing in technology companies. We do these sorts of due diligence projects. Running an application on the code in order to do this due diligence is critical. Explain to us a little bit more about why this should not only be important for the software company, but for any venture capital group or investor that's looking to place money into a tech company.
Yeah, sure. I mean, from the perspective of an investor, they're ultimately looking for a return on their investment. They want to make money. And if you pour a large investment into a company under the assumption that they're going to be able to go out and sell licenses for copies of their software, and then it turns out that they can't do that because they've virally infected their software with one of these copyleft licenses we've discussed. They could get hit with a lawsuit, which could completely destroy, wipe out all their profits, or their entire business model could just be undermined altogether. And you, as an investor, you really don't want to take those kinds of risks. You don't want to have sort of like a ticking time bomb waiting for you. So it's really important. At the very least, you should ask the companies that you're investing in, hey, do you have a strong understanding of any third-party license obligations that you might be bound by? Have you done a license audit? Have you scanned your source code? Have you spoken to an attorney? Things like this, because companies that are, you know, aware of these things and sort of taking care of them early on, they're not going to have as much risk. And quite frankly, it sort of shows a sense of responsibility, a sense of just having it together for that small startup that, oh, they've been looking at these things from the beginning and they're taking every legal risk seriously. They're not just clicking through license terms and things like that.
Right. And so we're copyright attorneys, so we're used to talking the language of infringement and asset value. But I suppose at an investor level, if you're investing in a piece of proprietary software and it turns out that the source code's not protectable because of embedded copyleft software, your entire premise for investing in this company that you have got a protectable proprietary asset could be turned upside down pretty quick. When should someone, a stakeholder in one of these issues, really talk to an attorney?
Sure. I wouldn't say that everyone is going to need to talk to an attorney. Really, you're going to have to look at your situation and determine the value of what you're trying to do and the risk associated with that. So if you think you've got a piece of software that you're developing that's got a lot of value to it, I mean, you think it's worth, you know, millions or something like that, but you're not sure whether you have the right to redistribute it, say, as a closed source application that you control, That's a good situation to talk to an attorney. Generally, a lot of these high-risk open source licenses are only going to be triggered on distribution to a third party. So if you're planning on just downloading a piece of open source software and using it internally, you know, as like a tool, as a developer tool or something like that for your internal business usage, and you're a small company, you might not need to talk to an attorney right away. It's really when you're talking about distributing your own software applications and things like that, that you're going to be more in need of an attorney. And then if you're a growing enterprise, if you're looking for seed funding, if you're growing, if you're just looking to grow, if you are becoming larger, you might want to talk to an attorney just for an initial consultation on anything you should be looking out for. Maybe they can help you set up your own compliance program. Because if you start looking at these things early on, it's much less of a headache in the long term. The worst case scenario is when you get hit by an open source issue that you didn't even know existed, something that you didn't know your developers were downloading, that you didn't know that one of your developers put in the software, those can really blindside you. If all of a sudden you have somebody that's demanding payment for license fees, or worse yet, demanding that you release your source code, those are things that you want to look out for. So really, it's just if you think that you run the risk of losing a lot of money.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a little money involved, and sometimes there's a lot of money at stake, so you need to calculate that all in your risk assessment. My name is attorney Enrico Schaefer. This is Traverse Legal Radio. Today we've been talking to Russell Galvin, open source licensing attorney. Russ, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me today, Enrico.
You've been listening to the Tech Lawyer Podcast, sponsored by Traverse Legal PLC, a law firm representing clients like you on matters just like yours. You can find the Tech Lawyer Podcast on most podcast listening platforms, including your home devices. Until next time, remember that good attorneys win for their clients. Great attorneys tell you up front how they're going to do it and how much it will cost.